Welcome to episode 20 of Indestructible, Indestructible Latin America with Rodrigo Acuña. This podcast is a collaborative effort between myself and Alborada, an independent voice on Latin American politics, media, and culture based in the United Kingdom. I am a contributing editor of Alborada and am based in Sydney, Australia. If you like the content of this podcast, you may want to consider supporting us on Patreon. All of our patrons are now receiving a small selection of references to articles, podcasts, and books which deal with some of the key topics discussed in each episode. Another way you can support us is by simply sharing this episode and letting your friends know about this podcast. You will find us on Spotify under the name Alborada, which is spelled A-L-B-O-R-A-D-A, and on Twitter and Facebook under Indestructible Podcast. On Instagram, you'll find us under the title Indestructible Pod. While in recent weeks, the incumbent progressive president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, has been in the news due to his bouts with COVID-19, earlier this month, he declared, quote, "The U.S. government, specifically through USAID, has for some time been financing organizations openly against the legal and legitimate government I represent." He added, quote, "This is clearly an interventionist act, contrary to international law and the relations which should prevail between free and sovereign states." Generally, AMLO has done his best to maintain good diplomatic relations with the United States, even during the turbulent Trump administration. On a regional level, he has condemned U.S. economic sanctions against Cuba and Venezuela, while also critiquing the excesses of consumer society and capitalism. During his morning press conferences, which have staggering numbers of viewers and are now becoming mandatory viewing for observers of Mexican politics, AMLO constantly displays his deep knowledge of Mexican history while communicating information he says the corporate media ignores or misrepresents. In this episode, I speak to Mexican academic Etienne von Bertra and take an in-depth look at the presidency of AMLO. A lecturer at the University College London, Etienne's research includes civil society and paradigm change in water governance and defense of the territory in Mexico and land democracy and justice in the context of energy transition, the case of southern Mexico. He is currently studying the Tren Maya project in Yucatan Peninsula, Mexico. I now leave you with Etienne von Bertra. I want to focus this interview on the current administration of the progressive president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO. Before we draw our attention on his presidency, though, Mexico is often in the mainstream media for stories on the drug trade or flamboyant drug kingpins like El Chapo Guzmán. What we are often not told by the mainstream media, of course, is that the United States is the largest consumer of illegal substances. And it's also my understanding that Mexico has high levels of gun violence surrounding the drug trade, but the country itself has very strict gun laws. So I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this area of the political and economic situation in Mexico, and what is the mainstream media not telling us?
Yeah, well, such a representation of Mexico is unfortunate, but is to some extent understandable, given the levels of violence unleashed since President Felipe Calderón took office. This is the conservative president from PAN in 2006, and he decided as a desperate measure to combat the illegitimacy of his electoral win with the approval of the U.S. to declare a war on drugs in Mexico. So even if cartels had operated in Mexico for much longer, as in the US and in many countries, it was not until that year when the crisis of violence, killings, and disappearances was unleashed, together with numerous human rights violations throughout the country. So that is a moment that is very important to have in mind. We are now certain that Calderón pursued not a guerra contra el narco, but a guerra con el narco, as his security chief, Genaro García Luna, who is awaiting trial, a jail sentence in the US, created Calderon's strategy with the Sinaloa cartel. So again, this is a very particular moment in history, but it has a start. It still has no end, but Mexico is working on it. So addressing the drug-related and other violence has been extraordinarily difficult. There's been some progress in some fronts, but it's very difficult. And it definitely doesn't help to have not only the largest market of illegal substances north of the border, but also the country supplies most, if not all, the weapons that enter to the country and end up in the hands of criminal organizations. So this particular one is one of the key areas that the present government is working on so that guns stop crossing the border. This is definitely not my area of knowledge, but I do recommend reading people like reporter Ion Grillo or academic Carlos Pérez Ricard and others that have followed and studied both the question of a drug trade, but also the violence and the responses to it much more deeper than I.
Mm-hmm. So in thinking about the conditions that led AMLO to becoming president in 2018, in 1994, Mexico saw the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, come into effect. That same year, the Zapatista Army of National Liberation, the EZLN, declared war on the Mexican state. I'm wondering, what impact has NAFTA had on Mexican society since 1994 in, say, the areas of politics, social equality, urban development, and the environment? And how did the effects of NAFTA feed into, I guess, laying the groundwork for AMLO's candidacy resonating with the Mexican population?
Yeah, the impact was brutal. The Zapatistas and other critical organizations and individuals knew it very well, that what would happen with the trade agreement with Canada and the US was going to be significant, as it cemented the neoliberal path that Mexico had started since the 80s. Personally, I cannot think of any other moment in recent history that changed the country so dramatically. In the run-up to NAFTA and to make possible taking part of NAFTA, Mexico had to significantly reform its constitution, which had emanated from the Mexican Revolution and was one of the most progressive at the time. A significant reform, for instance, was that of Article 27, which regulates the use of land and its resources. Among other things, it now allows for the privatization of common land, known as ejidos. But in short, everything, including water resources and services, could be now privatized or regulated, not by the state, but through the market. This created a few winners and a handful of new multimillionaires that bought state enterprises, such as famous Carlos Slim, who all of a sudden had every Mexican citizen and company as its telecoms client. But this happened in many sectors as well. On the other hand, it did very little to overcome massive poverty and meant the dispossession of land and common goods from communities around the country. But this neoliberal turn cemented with NAFTA also created a new political class who saw politics as a way to become prosperous, wealthy. So corruption existed before, obviously, but it was significantly expanded, and I would say it became the norm. Only now, and with AMLO's government in power and with the transparency that brings and public deliberation, we are realizing the full extent of the robbery to the Mexican people during the past three decades.
In late 2018, of course, that's when Andrés Manuel López Obrador became the 65th president of Mexico. I know that the presidential elections in 2006 were considered to be stolen by many, which would have seen AMLO win back then. I remember I read an article on that. Could you tell us about AMLO's background before getting into office? And I guess, what platform did he run on?
Yeah, What people need to know is that López Obrador, thanks to decades of social struggle and political activism, got to know the country and its problems like no other politician before. I would say like no other Mexican, and we're 130 million. This is not a minor thing. He was born and raised in the southern state of Tabasco, where his political work started. As most politicians in the country, he started with the PRI, of course, the main party that ruled the country for more than 70 years. Very soon, he realized how undemocratic the party was and led efforts to reform it at the local level, Tabasco. He had studied in Mexico City and moved there to continue his political work. And he became mayor in 2000. It was not called mayor before, but he ran the capital city from 2000 to 2006. This was in parallel with the government of Vicente Fox. It was not the first progressive mayor of the city. There was one before, but it marked a new era for the governance of the capital city, which remains until now. Now, as you mentioned, this victory in 2010 was a third attempt to become president. He had been candidate in 2006 and in 2012. And in between and during the campaigns, he traveled the country entirely. This is a massive country, right? Several times the size of France, I think seven times the size of the UK, visiting every municipality numerous times. So he knows the names of every community. He knows the names of every river that is crossed. He got to learn the grievances and aspirations of ordinary people, and particularly of the most marginalized and forgotten. It's difficult to summarize, talk about all aspects of his platform, but I think the phrase, por el bien de todos primero los pobres, for the benefit of everyone first the poor, summarizes much of his platform. And this was constructed as candidate and is pretty much how he runs as president. But this is, of course, way more elaborated and sophisticated. We need to remember that AMLO has written extensively, mostly on history, but he has written 20 books. And the Proyecto de Nación, which was his electoral agenda, and pretty much marks his government taking office, is well known.
In office, AMLO, of course, has developed the style of giving daily morning press conferences, talking about a peaceful revolution and the need to transform people's minds. In some respects, I guess AMLO reminds me a little bit of Uruguay's former leftist president, José Mujica, sort of a type of philosopher president who not only implemented progressive social and economic policies, but also regularly critiqued some core tenets of free market economics. Could you tell us more about these aspects of AMLO?
Well, the morning press briefings or conferencias matutinas, because they happen early in the morning, or mañaneras, more commonly known, are a very important feature of AMLO's, not only style, but of AMLO's government, and the way, the style and the action of government governing. And they've been extremely successful as a mechanism to maintain the public informed about the government's actions, projects, and programs. Also to confront corporate media disinformation. We need to remember that for a very long time, most of the media was heavily fueled or financed by the federal government. So lots of money went into the press and TV stations and radio to keep them happy and to not attack the government. This was a style, a common thing. And AMLO stopped that. There is still some money going to advertisement, but very, very little. So the media corporations in Mexico are, for the most, pretty angry since he took office and are hostile every single day using a lot of misinformation and lies as well. So this mañanera is a very important aspect to confront that disinformation. Now, he inaugurated this style with these mañaneras when he governed Mexico City. So particularly for reporters in that city, you know, waking up every day to, you know, queue and to be ready for 7 a.m. conference, they know what it means to wake up every morning. And actually, before the mañanera, every single day, he has a security briefing with most of his cabinet. So that's from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. This is Monday to Friday. And of course, on the weekends, he is traveling the country. Traveling the country, visiting, supervising works, projects, programs, but in every moment still, of course, listening to people because he has no... He got rid of the presidential force that protected the president and kept him always distant from the people, which is something that AMLO does not have. So when he goes anywhere, people just approach him. So the political opposition and conservatives more widely hate the conferencias mañaneras. And that is why they try to ridicule it or to discredit them or even ban them altogether, such as the famous academic and political commentator Denis Dresser, who recently called for the mañaneras to end in order to bring back the harmony of the country and stop polarization, things like that. So it is so effective. It is being studied, I know, in many countries because this marks a new way of not only keeping connected to the public, but also for the president to be, if there's any issue, anything that is, happens in the country or that is any controversy, it will be brought by someone in the mañanera that day or the following day. So it's a way also for him to understand and to have firsthand a contact with what is happening. No? One is through his contact with the public. Others is with of course, it's a cabinet and so on. And the other is through reporters from all kinds of media that go there with whatever intent. But anyone that is registered can go there and ask questions. Maybe you won't have the chance to have the voice in one day, but if you keep going, you eventually get it because, of course, there's no time for everyone. It's the mañaneras is essential to the way of governing, but it has to do also with the very poor role the media is playing in general.
And as I said, with my question, he also has this sort of a folksy sort of philosopher president style where he'll critique core aspects of capitalism, and then he'll mention a typical sort of a ranchera that he thinks highlights a particular theme that he's talking about. He does remind me a little bit of...
Of course.
Really Mujica,
no, he's a philosopher. He doesn't speak sophisticated language, which some academics, despise, but he's not interested in speaking to intellectuals. He speaks to ordinary people. So it's not that he is not sophisticated, it's that he's not interested in that. But he is a philosopher, he's an educator. Every single mañanera has a bit of lessons of Mexican history and world history. You know, one of the other things he was ridiculed is that he doesn't speak English. As you know, how come a Mexican president could not speak English? And he doesn't know to speak English. He has a very deep understanding and profound understanding of world history and how the world works. So yes, every single mañanera has an element of education, informing, responding. But I would say, as you would put it, in raising consciousness of Mexicans. I would say that we are living in times where Mexicans are way more politicized than they were any time in the past.
Interesting. On November 27th, an estimated 1.2 million people arrived in Mexico City to celebrate the four-year anniversary of the inauguration of President AMLO. Since his inauguration, according to journalist Kurt Hartbath, AMLO, and I quote, nationalized lithium stores and lifted the minimum wage by 20%, end quote. What else has the president of Mexico done to reduce poverty and roll back the privatization of public assets? And what criticisms would you make of his administration? What do you think he's not getting right?
Yeah, Kurt Hagbart is someone that those interested in Mexico, English speakers, should read. He's done a tremendous work in documenting and, of course, maintaining a critical eye as well. He's done a lot. I mean, I could list a number of programs, for instance, Sembrando Vida, which is not a, was not conceived a reforestation program. It's a poverty reduction program for peasants, but has now close to 500,000 peasants being paid every month to work the land, a small 2.5 hectares of land for each member of the program, and receive an income to use agroecological practices to ensure they can feed themselves through the milpa system, and they also have plant trees for the to sell fruit, but also trees for the future for their descendants. So it's but as that there are many programs, and it's extraordinary what the government encompasses in terms of I don't think AMLO has failed short on his electoral promises, to be honest, which is perhaps one of the reasons why he has such high approval rate. So when he, constructed in very short time the new airport of Mexico City, or the refinery in Tabasco, or now the Tren Maya in the southeast, which is where I am now, I'm studying that project. And he seems to be obsessive with finishing, for instance, this huge train, 1,500 kilometer train in the southeast of Mexico. And bringing back the passenger train that was abandoned once they were privatized in the 1990s. It's not an obsession to just, he had an agenda, he put forward to the public, and he's delivering. And then we had the pandemic and a few other things that have delayed what he attempted to do. But he said from the beginning, I will govern only for 6 years. So this idea that he would reelect himself, which is forbidden in Mexico, was always a lie by the media. He's never had the intention of reelecting himself. But he said it would feel like two sexenios, like 12 years. So the speed of his, the energy that he has in his work is translated in the action of the government. But it is true that some constitutional reforms got stuck and have been continuously impeded since his party, Morena, lost some seats in Congress and Senate in 2021. So there are other reforms that just haven't been able to happen and have been replaced by smaller changes in law, which his party can do because having simple majority. Sometimes I and probably many feel he should better communicate with the middle and upper classes, as he perhaps has alienated unnecessary people that could have continued to support this government. But again, this is not his focus. He's not interested in, he has not taken anything away from people, from no one. But there are many who have lost real or perceived privileges, including the traditional intellectuals that had very direct access to the presidency and now they're treated as anyone else. So again, that hasn't helped in some sectors of society, but there are reasons why he is not his concern to please them. It has been difficult to understand how him and his party haven't been able to reform, for instance, the neoliberal water law of 1992 or the mining law, which allowed for the concession of almost half of the Mexican territory to mining exploration and exploitation. But reforms are now on the table. This is just happening as we speak. So we have still a lot to see in his remaining month in power, which is a bit more than a year.
Addressing the 21st summit of foreign ministers from the community of Latin American and Caribbean states, CELAC, in 2021, AMLO stated that, and I quote, throughout almost the entire 19th century, we suffered from countless invasions, annexations. Mexico suffered the loss of half of its territory in 1848. He added, and again, I quote, since that time, the U.S. has not ceased to carry out overt or covert operations against the independent countries located south of the Bravo River, end quote. During previous occasions, AMLO also condemned the U.S. blockade against Cuba. Now, for our audience, what could you tell us about AMLO's foreign policy and how he has handled relations with both the Trump and Biden administration?
Yeah, so national sovereignty has been an important tenet of his government, but also the respect of every nation, of its of the independence of nations. So he is, of course, highly critical of all forms of imperialism, past and present. But it's very interesting because he has such remarkable political and diplomatic skills, despite not speaking English, that he had a good relationship even with Donald Trump. Now, he knew he could not afford to fight Donald Trump. That would have been disastrous for the country and would have been the end of his government. So remarkably, he maintained a good relation. He did what he could with the limitation of the Republicans, that part of the Republican Party ruling country. But he maintains a very good relationship now with the Biden administration. So the media, particularly corporate Anglophone media, like still today, bring that association with Trump. You know, he was friend of Donald Trump, therefore he's a bit like that, which is very stupid, because Biden has been in power, more than 2 years, right? 2 years and a half. So what is the relevance of speaking of that relation if now he has a very good relation with the Biden administration? Of course, this has been, people from the hard left can criticize this. How come he's not fighting the, you know, but he's not stupid. He cannot fight as others have done in the past, at least rhetorically. So he knows that we are in the interdependent countries. Our economy depends largely on the US economy. So what he has done is try to keep good relations on the basis of equality. Of course, equality is not there yet, but the aim and the stated aim, and he insists a lot in every meeting he has with US presidents and authorities, that we are an independent country, we're a sovereign country, and that the era of US interference in Mexico is over, and that we should be treated as equal partners. So AMLO continuously brings this phrase from Benito Juarez, I believe, that the best foreign policy is the política interior, no? Which means that he basically tries to lead by example. He has traveled very little around the world. because he wants to deliver. He wants to make sure that Mexico changes in the direction that is definitely changing. And then as a second, I would say, goal is to support other progressive governments and hopefully have a much fairer world system than the one we have at present.
Returning to domestic politics, UMLO, of course, has powerful enemies, such as the local corporate media you mentioned before, but also international outlets like the New York Times or in the UK, The Guardian, which you have previously said, and I quote, has a lot of difficulty in giving a balanced perspective, end quote. This is certainly the case when it comes to their coverage of progressive governments in Latin America. Could you tell us more about UMLO's domestic and foreign opponents, and could the hostility towards his government by local elites see his administration, I guess, seriously challenged, worst case scenario, even overthrown, like Evo Morales in 2019, or even Pedro Castillo last year in Peru?
Yeah, well, this is something that many of us have feared since the start of government. Personally, it's less a fear now than it was before. Because they've tried everything. In Mexico, the opposition is all the rest. Morena has become the main political party, and again, it's only a few years old. He started it, which has all kinds of problems as a now hegemonic party, of course. It's not without its challenges and issues. But all the rest, from the supposed left, like PRD and the PAN and all the other parties, and the PRI, the tradition of the largest party, are now against him. With most of Mexican intellectuals, with most of the people in academia, I'm academic myself, and you know that it's a very particular sector of middle upper class people. That again was used to a lot of privileges, and now probably has a bit less attention and less discretionary use of public funds as well for research and so on. And the research is now prioritized in what the country determines as what are the areas of higher priority, as any country does. I'm an academic in the UK, and it's the UK government that establishes the priorities for publicly funded research. So the same is happening here. So a lot of people are angry, a lot, an absolute minority, and are trying to always attack him and basically scrutinize and attack anything. Sorry, there's a bit of noise now because I'm in a public space. And the media. And this goes also internationally. So I would say that most of the media around the world, Anglophone and Spanish speaking, are against this government and telling a lot of lies. I've been following the work of The Guardian for some years. I'm about to hopefully this year publish something with much more deeper analysis from what I've been doing so far. But they have openly lied consistently. The level of the biases that are in the media, as it was with Morales or with Pedro Castillo, is enormous. But they haven't been able to do much harm. So while some people, even close friends or family of mine, might have that impression, you know, because of course if you hear or read things often in the media, you end up thinking like that or believing it's true. But in Mexico, it does very little. Because people see what this government is delivering, see that we are in a new pathway. Not that all the problems have been resolved, but that we are in a new direction that most people wanted and are backing this government. So I very much doubt that this could be the case in Mexico, and also because we have elections in 2024. So AMLO will retire. So why would they try to do something? But they're trying. They're trying hard. They're Mexican individuals who fly constantly to Washington and to conservative institutions that have close ties to the army. They're trying everything to intervene in the country. But mostly, it's not only because of AMLO anymore, it's because the opposition has absolutely no chances of winning in 2024. They cannot win. I mean, not they cannot, but they haven't been able to put forward any platform, any ideas. They have just been attacking this government for 4 years, 4.5 years, lost all the time. And people don't believe in them. So they are angry. They will try everything to make sure Morena does not continue ruling for the next 6 years. But I would say that the transformation that AMLO started is here to stay for at least a decade more. And that's why some people are and continue to be very angry and will try whatever they can, even though it could mean something really harmful for the country, to just stop this.
Etienne von Bertrap, professor of political ecology at
lecturer
at political ecology at the University College of London. Thank you so much for this this interview with us here at Indestructible Alboradas podcast. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Rodrigo.
Thank you. As always, I would like to thank Alborada for this opportunity to host Indestructible, Indestructible. Once again, I would encourage our listeners to support this podcast on Patreon, which you can do for as little as the price of one cup of coffee a month. My sincere thanks, as always, goes to Alborada's founder and co-editor, Pablo Navarrete, who produces this podcast. If you have any comments on this episode, please write to us on our email, which you will find on the Alborada website. We'll be back soon with episode 21, but until then, goodbye and stay safe.